Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about nightmares with author and dream analyst J.M. DeBord. Nightmares, we've all had them. You're trapped or chased, haunted by demons, and then you wake up terrified and wondering what it all meant. They can be triggered by many things like stress, life changes, illness, and maybe the reason is simply that scary movie you watched before bed. But is your unconscious mind delivering messages to you while you sleep? Let's explore the tools you need to sort through and make sense of your nightmares. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, a conversation about nightmares with J.M. DeBord, author of Nightmares, Your Guide to Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. And thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate this, and I'm really excited to dive into this as well.
I am too, Carol. Thank you for having me on your show and giving me this opportunity to give your listeners a little tutorial, a run through of what nightmares are and why we have them. And what most people want to know when they're having nightmares is what they can do about it to make them stop.
Exactly.
So, yeah, let's cover that.
Can we dive into a little bit of your history and how you got interested in this line of work and studying dreams, analyzing dreams, writing about dreams?
Yeah, you want to know your expert, right?
Exactly, you know,
Who's this guy, you know, and why does anyone think he knows anything more than anyone else about dreams and nightmares? And well, I got into it about 30 years ago when I was in my early 20s and I was in college. I was studying something other than, you know, dreams and psychology. I was in political science and journalism, and I had a career path ahead of me as a journalist. And well, let's just say that I ended up doing something else, you know, kind of related, which is writing books. But I got into dreams because I discovered that they actually have meaning. You know, I mean, you hear maybe in a psychology class, oh, there's these, you know, Sigmund Freud, and he was a psychoanalyst, and he taught people that there's, you know, this hidden meaning in their dreams. And you look at your own dreams and you go, you know, this is kind of, my dreams are surreal and nonsensical. And well, what I found out was that they actually make a lot of sense, that they're highlighting what's going on in your life and giving you a perspective on things about yourself, you know, the events of your life, about especially the emotions that you're experiencing, and also the existential questions that you're trying to answer. Why am I here? What is life all about? What can I be doing to have a fulfilling and enriching life? And I discovered around that time, Dr. Carl Jung, who set me off on a discovery trail into his writings and the many people who picked up on things that he wrote about, and then they took it off in their own directions. And I went down all those different paths, especially when it came to dreams, but just generally, how does the mind tick? And what is this thing called the unconscious mind? You know, Carol, I remember when I first ran across that term, and I'm like, yeah, unconscious. I was watching a boxing match the other night. One guy knocked the other one unconscious. And I'm going, well, what does this mean? He goes, no. Carl Jung says that there's a whole other side of the mind other than the conscious mind that is always operating. But when we're dreaming, it has our full attention, and it creates these scenarios for us to learn and grow and know ourselves better. And ultimately, the goal is to unite the two sides of the mind. So the unconscious, in a way, is training us in our dreams to become the mate that it needs. And he called it the marriage of the soul, which is a term from alchemy, which is a sort of inner union to become something greater, like this larger personality. When I talk about fascinating, that really grabbed my attention. So I went off into all the study of, you know, dream psychology, Carl Jung, all his contemporaries. I discovered that I had a knack for explaining this stuff because it can get really deep. The average person who doesn't have a background in this stuff can get really lost in the material. But I found that when I explained it to friends and stuff, and then I was like, look at your dream here, and I can explain what this character means. Does this resonate with you? And they'd be like, wow, yeah, I get it. I always thought my dreams were meaningless, but I get it now. I can see it. And that made me realize, I was like, yeah, I can explain this. My journalism background came in handy, because what do you do as a journalist? Take vast amounts of information and condense it down in its simplest form to be able to convey to your readers. Then I ended up becoming a dream expert by publishing books about the subject. And that leads us to where we are today.
I've not completely read the book. I've read quite a bit of the book because I went to the points in the book that really applied to me, kind of common occurrences in my own dreams. But reading the book, you have had your own history with nightmares.
You talk about qualification through experience. You know, when it came to nightmares, I had my own personal experiences with them, from the kind of common ones like your teeth falling out and, you know, like falling through a dark place.
And if I may interrupt there, if I may interrupt, I never knew that teeth falling out was a thing in dreams. And I've always had that problem with in my dreams. And it was kind of reassuring when I read the chapter in your book about teeth, because didn't know that other people had that. And apparently it's quite common.
Quite common and a very versatile dream theme. I take the approach for conceptualizing what's happening in a dream that there is an author behind the scenes that is very aware of what is going on in you and your life, can see into the places where you don't necessarily see into very well. Dreams want to show us what we don't know or understand. They're not here just to repeat what we already know. They want to give us something new we can walk away with. And that's what the storyteller's job is to do, but to do it using symbolism. And really, it's metaphor. A metaphor compares two things that don't appear to relate to each other, but it finds a hidden relationship between them. So the dream picks up on something like teeth. We all have experiences involving our teeth, and it can use various themes to play out a story, like your teeth crack and fall out of your mouth. And you go, well, what does that mean? And you go, well, the first place I would go as a dream interpreter is I would say, are you cracking up because of stress? But you also, when teeth fall out of your face, like your teeth are in your mouth, which is in your face. And if teeth fall out of your mouth, it means you have lost something from your face. Condense it down. Loss of face is the idea. And it means that you've taken a blow to your image, to your prestige. Your teeth are associated with your image. Right. You know, if you meet someone for the first time and they open their mouth, they smile, and you see that their teeth are all crooked and yellow and haven't been taken care of, you know, they're missing teeth, it creates an impression of the person. And that's the same idea. That association is what the dream picks up on. The storyteller says, well, I can use this to say, for example, that you have a bad impression of a person. Now it shows them with bad teeth. You know, in reality, their teeth could be sparkly white and perfectly straight. But in the dream, you're like, hey, wait a minute. Your teeth are all crooked and messed up. What's going on here? And it's because the dream is creating symbolism with that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is quite a popular theme. And I set up the book so that you could read it beginning to end, but you don't have to. You can look up the things that are maybe the most common from your dreams, your nightmares, and the things that are that you are personally most interested in. There's a very extensive glossary in the back, but there's also the chapters are set up to be able to group things together under themes like disasters and violence. And now you can be like, yeah, man, I have a lot of dreams where there's violence in them. And I go, okay, well, let's zero in, you know, and find the topic or the theme in your dreams. And now you can read that section, and it's like reading an entry in an encyclopedia.
And that's what I really appreciated, because I immediately went to the teeth thing. I was like, oh my God, this is a thing? And then ghosts, poltergeist spirits, that's something that I have an ongoing thing with. Falling, I think that's extremely common. A lot of people have that. But I jumped ahead, and I apologize for that. But when you mentioned teeth, I had to ask. But let's go back to your nightmares. And they started for you at a very young age.
I had some experience with it that was unusual. And I knew that I needed to share what I had experienced so that I could validate the experiences that other people have had and are having and will have. Because while most nightmares are internal dramas, they take place entirely inside of your own psyche or are at least produced in there, there are things that can come from outside of us and influence us that can kind of talk to us in our sleep. But it's usually not what people think. And my ordeal, it took about 30 years to go from the first nightmare at 9 years old until at 39 years old, I ended up in the office of a shaman, a shamanic practitioner who showed me the roots of the dream in generational trauma, very, very high level generational trauma, the use of black magic generations ago, sort of hatred and violence that had been committed and got passed down to me because I was as part of that lineage, I was attached to it, or it attached itself to me as a sort of dark energy. I opened the book by explaining that nightmare where I was 9 years old, biking on my street in my neighborhood. And I turn around and there's a man in a black car who's following me. And I see like his face up close and he looks like the Dark Lord from Star Wars, except I hadn't seen Star Wars yet. This is 1979. And he had that same vibe of the archetypal bad guy. And I knew that he wanted my soul.
Nine years old.
And I'm running for my life. What I knew about a soul was that it came from God and that it was the most important part of a person, that of me, he wanted my soul. And I'm like, no, you can't have my soul. So I bike, you know, like full speed ahead and try to get away from him, which he's in a car and it's a dream. So, you know, I can only get so far. I see a store and I think, well, there's going to be adults in here and they will protect me. And I run inside the store and it's empty. And now I'm trapped. And here comes the bad guy. And that's where the dream ends. And, you know, I wake up and screaming, probably crying, scared out of my mind. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm here in my bed. Was not what I thought it was. Okay, I'm safe. Everything's okay. But the dream stuck with me. You know, I mean, nightmares, you can have a bad nightmare and it can stick with you. But that one stuck with me. It would pop up every once in a while, just sort of randomly. And then oddly enough, in seventh grade, I was in an enrichment class and they had a dream analyst in to talk about dreams. And the analyst said, is there anyone who had a nightmare that really stuck with them? And I swear, Carol, he was there for me. And I think my teacher actually knew. He was a very spiritual man. And I think he picked up on some things and I think he arranged it. But he's not around anymore, as far as I know, Mr. Whitmore, Daryl Whitmore, Dayton, Ohio. Hi, it's Jason. Remember me? If you're listening, you know, you might have saved my life because you put someone in my path that I needed to see. The analyst says, does anybody have a dream or a nightmare that really stuck with them and they want to explore it? And I'm like, yeah, right here. And we did a regression technique to go into the dream. I understand these techniques very well now because I use them as a, you know, as an analyst. But, you know, back then, this was all very new to me. And he took me into a scene and he says, what are the roots of the nightmare? And I see these two families and they're in a blood feud. Hatfields and McCoys, man. I mean, these people hate each other. And there's blood and violence. I'm sensing all this. And he goes, try to find a reason for them to stop hating each other. Try to end the feud. And I think about it in my 12-year-old mind, I come up with, well, violence is bad and you shouldn't hurt each other. And, you know, I'm talking to these two groups of dream characters, these two families that I'm seeing in my imagination. Things turn really dark and ugly real fast, and the analyst has to pull me out of it. And as I say in the book, I was like a wounded animal leaving a blood trail, and there was something following me. And it was the bad guy in my dreams. And he followed me into my teenage years and into my 20s. And he kept appearing in my nightmares. And when I got into my later 20s, I finally kind of pulled myself together in a way where I learned how to fight back through meditation and spiritual practice and overcoming addiction. I was in a really dark place up to a point, especially some points in my teenage years. I mean, I was in some really dark places and I managed to pull myself out of that, but I was never quite healed from it. I felt like there was something following me, even haunting me. And I knew that it was that man from my dream because he would pop up every once in a while in my nightmares. There were times that I heard him speak out of the mouth of other people.
Oh,
I would have these weird encounters with dark people or people who were very addicted because their consciousness operates at such a low level that they can become a host for powerful spiritual entities or energy. I just think of it as energy, but it's dark and it can personify. And I would hear him talking through people. So one night I had a nightmare. This was the big one when in my late 20s, where his minions showed up in a van to kidnap me off of a dark street. You know, suddenly I'm walking down the street. There's the van. Suddenly the door opens and they're like, yep, we're doing this game again, because I knew this had happened before. And I'm thinking to myself, not this time. You tell me where he is and I'm going to go find him and we're going to end this thing tonight. So then the dream says, okay. And I'm there in his office tower, like steel, dark glass, middle of the night, huge office tower built like a fortress. He's on the top floor. I walk into the room. It's all glass. And in the middle of the room is a glass coffin. And I see him laying there. He looks just like a vampire, but more like craggly and burn scars. And I mean, the Dark Lord from Star Wars. I mean, he looked just like him. And I come up on him and I see him in his coffin and I'm like, oh, I got you now. And I wrap my hands around his neck and I just start squeezing just in a rage. And I see him looking at me and he's laughing. And I realize at that moment, he wants me to feed on my anger and rage. Just like Anakin, that's how he becomes Darth Vader. Feed on his, he found power in his rage. In that moment, I was finding power in my rage, but it was turning me to the dark side. And I just sort of let go and the scene crumbles and I wake up and I feel hopeless. I can't beat him this way. How am I supposed to fight something that's already dead? How do you kill something that's dead, but it's alive like a vampire, you know? I get into my 30s and I've kind of lost my mojo. I went through cycles of addictiveness and I was in a bad one. I was seeing someone and our relationship ended. And the last thing that she did for me was she gave me the phone number of someone who had helped her when her husband died suddenly and he in an accident and his spirit was hanging around and she knew it. And she needed help being able to resolve what was unresolved between them so that he could cross over. So she went to a shaman that was referred to her, a shamanic practitioner. Sometimes people think of shamans as like some guy down in the jungle of Peru or something who's, you know, like indigenous. Mm-hmm. Well, this guy was from Long Island, wicked sense of humor. One of the funniest, most interesting people I've ever met. His name is Steve Rogat. He says, it's okay. I can use his name in interviews. creativethought.org is his website. And he'd been at practicing as a shaman for years. He helped people when no one else could help them. And I went to see him because I knew when she slid that piece of paper and said, here's his name and number. Next thing I know, I'm in his office telling him my story. And he goes and consults his spirit guides. And I say, go. He mentally just kind of goes mm-hmm. into something akin to a trance. And he comes back. And he goes, you got some serious crap going on here, Sonny. You've got a family, a generational trauma, and this is a generational curse. The way he explained it was that generations ago, there was a woman in my family who stole the husband of another woman. That other woman took out her revenge by hiring a sorcerer to cast a curse. Now, these days, you might think these are things that only happen, like, you know, in like Haiti or something, where, you know, people practice voodoo. Well, these things used to be a lot more common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were practitioners of the dark arts. They could be hired to do the things for you that you wanted to do, whether it was cast a love spell or it was, you know, to get rich, or you could make someone else poor, or you could cast a death curse or whatever. And he said that I had come into this world, that part of my mission in life was to end the curse. And then he said, "Are you ready?" And I'm like, "Oh God, are you kidding
me?"
You know, I mean, it's so surreal. I had no background in this stuff at the time, or very little background, Carol. So I was not really prepared for this.
And what does it even entail? It sounds kind of frightening at the same time. Yes, I'd like this gone, but what do I have to do?
A shamanic ritual that began with removing what he described as a black blade that was between my shoulder blades. So when I say blade, I mean a knife. He said it was a metaphysical object that had been inserted into my energy system, and that it was the attachment between my energy system and the energy system of the sorcerer who cast the curse, who of course died in body centuries ago, but was still attached to this thing. He was still, like, he was just as much a prisoner of it, in the sense that his power that he used and misused had become his own prison in the afterlife.
Oh.
And yeah, I know, heavy stuff, right?
Yeah.
I'm going along with it. And it was weird is that he kept pinging things that he didn't know about me, but he knew the truth of them. Like, how did he know? He said that the curse was that the women in my family would marry tragic men. Well, how did he know that my father is a tragic man? How did he know that my grandmother had married 5 different men and outlived them all, and they were all tragic men, especially my grandfather? He died at 43 under a dark cloud. He was a very tragic man. And as far as we can tell, going back generations, this has been the pattern. I didn't tell him any of that. And he's telling me not only that stuff about my family, he's telling me about the stuff I was seeing in my dreams. And that was, I was just like, all right, I'll go along with this because you know something that I, you know, like, I don't know where you're getting your information from, but you're not cold reading me. You know, I was very skeptical of it, you know, very cautious walking into this. So we did a shamanic ritual that took me into the space where that man was, the sorcerer, and we opened a portal to the light and sent him into it. That's it. Well, to make a long story short, and I just gave away the climactic ending of my book, darn it. So
there's so much to read in the book.
So that's, yeah, my ordeal with that, I knew that I needed to validate this to other people, for other people who've had these experiences, because they don't know who else to turn to. And if they go to the quote unquote experts, what they'll hear is the standard line. This was a drama that is, it's not real. And that's the worst thing you can say about someone's dream, because it's a real experience they have while they're dreaming it. And no matter how objectively real any of it is, you have to treat it that way. It's never just a dream. That's the worst thing you can say to a person after they've had a powerful experience or any experience in a dream, but it dismisses their experience. People look at me as an expert. I've proven it over. I've proven it through a public. I have a long public record as a dream expert, and people know me this way. And when they hear me talk about my experience, it helps to validate their experience.
Yes.
So that's why, yes, I wrote the book, and that's why I shared what I did. Carol, the first thing I thought when I got the contract for the book, right? My publisher came and said, "Hey, we want you to write a book about nightmares and how to interpret them." And I'm like, great. And I'm not going to tell them about my nightmare. There's no way I'm sharing this publicly. I had some experiences. I was on Jim Harold's paranormal podcast, and someone called in and we were doing live stuff, and the guy described something and he called it the same thing from my dream. He had the same name for the character. And I went, oh, Well, let me tell you about my experience. And that's what I knew. I was like, I've already let the cat out of the bag. So let me share this with people, because I need to tell them what I learned from this experience. And part of it was that you have to take responsibility for everything about yourself in your life, including the things that come to you in your dreams and your nightmares. And if you treat it as something that's not real, you're not taking responsibility for it. I also learned that nightmares are a type of initiation into deeper living. In the same way that we use initiatory ordeals and rituals to create special forces soldiers, to create saints and shamans, they go through ordeals, life and death ordeals, sometimes physically, sometimes, you know, more spiritually or existentially, but ordeals are how we create our heroes. And when you look at, if you've been plagued by nightmares and you can go, well, wait a minute, is this an initiatory process? And if I pass this process, if I even just survive it, I'll come out stronger. It'll unlock abilities in me. It'll give me something I can do in this world that's very special and unique, because I've passed the test and I understand things that other people don't understand. Well, now I have a purpose for this. And it's not just plaguing me. It's not just tormenting me, which, trust me, I've talked to a lot of people about their nightmares, and torment is, in a minority of cases, but a significant minority of cases, people have these recurring horrible nightmares. And I go, yeah. And I'm sorry that you're in this position. It's do or die. You either rise to the occasion and find the strength to get through this, or it'll destroy you. And I'm sorry to put it that way, but you have to understand that this is life and death. And it's playing out in your dreams, in your nightmares. What are you going to do about it? And usually people say, I want to get to work. I want to know how to get through this. And then that's when the real work can begin.
Now, for someone who has nightmares and what you've just said, and now they might be terrified and, oh my gosh, this is bigger. What's the difference? Because there's got to be some nightmares that are just caused by, you know, you watched The Exorcist before bed. Or, you know what I mean? Idea. There's some nightmares that might be stress related, might be caused by, maybe you're sick. You know, there's a lot of external causes resulting in your nightmare. What do you find the differences between one that you really should explore and that one is, you watch The Exorcist before bed? I mean, you can kind of debunk your own nightmare by going, well, what was I doing right before bed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I looked for everything I could for my nightmare before to explain The Dark Man. I even went to a dream analyst with it. You know, I had a mentor who taught me dream analysis, and he was my therapist, basically. And I took that dream to him, and, you know, we talked in depth about it and the whole history of it. And he also sensed that there was something more going on, but it was so tied up in my addictiveness and the dark side of me and stuff that it was hard to tell the difference. Well, first, my book covers, it's 120,000 words. It's twice the length of your average book. So it's like an encyclopedia of nightmares. And you can look it up and you can trace things to their source. You can find out the common causes behind a lot of these themes, even things like demons, devils, dark shadows, evil, Slender Man, vampires, zombies, murder, you know, rape. It's these things that people experience in their dreams, and there are ways of tracing them to their source within you and in the events and situations of your life. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, some dark thing that's after you. There's a deeper level with my dream. It took, well, let's see, I had it at 9 years old, and I got a clue that there was more to it about 29 years later. So it only took me 29 years to figure out that there was more to it. Well, kind of knew after that one dream with the dark, you know, the guy in the glass coffin in the office tower. I kind of had a clue at that point, but I didn't know for sure. This is what I tell people is that we have to work through the content of the dreams and trace them to their source, wherever it is. It could be, like you mentioned, chronic stressful situations. It could be some kind of dysfunction in yourself. Could be something that's really eating you from the inside, something mm-hmm. really bad in your emotions. Trauma. Oh, yeah. You know, trauma is a big reason why. And people with PTSD are known to have really bad nightmares related to it. You'll find it in the dream content. You'll find it through deeply exploring your inner world. And you can also find it because if you're not on the right track with understanding what's going on behind your nightmares, you will get answers that will point you in the right direction. In other words, you'll have subsequent nightmares or dreams that point you towards what it is that's really causing them. And that's how you find it. But it's largely intuitive. I would have never known without that shaman what was really going on. And I, as I explain in the book, I don't know for sure to this day if this was a narrative container that he created for healing, or if there actually was a sorcerer centuries ago who cast a curse on my family. I've asked the shaman, he's still to this day a good friend of mine, and I've asked him about it. And he goes, you know, I don't even try to split those hairs. He goes, this is how we heal people. This is, and when you look in the shamanism, you find out that they work with what they've got, and they create a narrative container for playing out a person's inner drama. They help to project it out onto something so that they can see it and interact with it. Mm-hmm. Much in the same way that my dream created this Dark Lord character for me to what? See and interact with him, to understand something. I have done a lot of work on that, and I did find that there were some weird things happening in my family home. Not weird, weird, but there was some addictiveness. There was a father who was introverted and had some real emotional issues going on. There were things that happened before I was old enough to form memories when we were a young family living in Los Angeles in the early 1970s as all the hippie stuff was going on. My dad was a musician. We were enmeshed in that stuff. It was hard for me to be able to trace all that stuff to its source and be able to say that there was definitely some sorcerer who was at work behind the scenes. But I will say this, it created a container for my healing. And I walked out of that office that day, and that chapter of my life was done.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with J.M. DeBord. If you would like to learn more about your nightmares and what they mean, you really need to read his book, Nightmares, Your Guide to Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. Also, you can listen to his podcast, The Dreams That Shape Us, and visit his website at jmdebord.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad-free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you so much for listening.